Hello again, Chris Lee and Alfred Esmond here to discuss Tennessee's trip to the College World Series. Vols had a banner regular season, finished the year as the number one ranked team in the polls, entered the NCAA tournament as the number one seed. Vols got through a regional and a super regional with a combined one loss and will be the favorite to win in Omaha, but tricky draw ahead. Some really good ACC teams on that side and some good SEC teams on the other side. We'll get into all of it in just a minute. Before we do, a reminder, we're brought to you by BetOnline, your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup playoffs this season. Every stat, matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino, get in on a game of blackjack or poker, unwind with one of 150 slots games. Head to the website today, get in on the action, use promo code BLEAV, that is BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline. The game starts here. All right, let's start with Tennessee. We'll talk about the offense and then the pitching. I think we decided everybody in the lineup or everybody but one in the lineup hit a home run in the Super Regional. Tennessee hit seven homers in the defeat of Evansville in the deciding game there. I mean, you got a power-hitting infield all around. Blake Burke at first, Christian Moore at second, Billy Amick at third. You know, you got Kavaris Tears in right, who's a draft prospect too. And guys on the bench like Dalton Bargo, who came off and got two home runs. Just a scary lineup to pitch to. Patient and power are probably the two words that describe the Vols the most.
Indeed. Yes, Chris. And I just updated myself this morning. They are within 15 home runs of 1997 LSU heading into Omaha. So if they got seven against Evansville, there's no telling what they can do in, let's say, a double elimination round. And then if they were to advance a championship round with the home run ball, very capable of doing it. So another cool storyline to watch with them. And as you said, guys across the board that can hit the long ball. You look down the list of, you know, the totals, Blake Burke, 19, Christian Moore, 32, Tears, 18, Dreiling, 20, Amick, 23, Hunter Ensley cracked double digits this weekend with 11, Dean Curley with 12. Tons of guys that can hit the long ball. That's their biggest threat. It's the name of their game, we know at this point, and that's how they're going to beat you. So that's the number one thing these three ACC teams are looking at heading into this round robin part of Omaha.
Yeah, I was looking at MLBpipeline.com this morning. They ranked the top, I think, 200 prospects for the draft. You had five ball hitters, Burke, Moore, Tears, Dreiling, and Amick, ranked between, I think, was it 20, 25, and 72 in their draft rankings. So a lot of fringe first rounder to mid third rounder type guys. Then we get to the pitching. Drew Beams, the headliner, he was ranked 61st in the rankings. He'll probably be their number two. They've been going in the one spot with, well, really an opener. Chris Stamos, the lefty transfer from Cal, but he's really the starter is Causey, A.J. Causey, the right-hander who comes in and gives him about six innings from time to time. We talked about the bullpen. Tennessee had some arms emerge late, but the big guy there is Nate Snead, and on an inning-per-inning basis, probably their best guy is Aaron Combs. But a deep Tennessee pitching staff may not have an absolute superstar in there, but a lot of really good arms.
Yeah, a ton of good arms. And I'd have to guess, and Chris, you probably think so as well. Friday's matchup against Florida State, they'll probably do the classic Stamos, then Causey or Snead after. That could be a good formula for them, I think. I mean, I look at this Florida State squad they have, and they just have a ton of guys that will rack up hits. No matter who they play. You look at Cam Smith back batting above 400. James Tibbs had a phenomenal super regional against UConn. He's batting 374. He had two home runs, I believe, in the winner take all or their game two that they took against UConn to be the first team to get into the field. More guys as well. Marco Dings, Jamie Furr above 300 as well. Daniel Cantu above 300. Max Williams, their center fielder, is a 300 hitter as well. Then a ton of guys in the high 200s as well. So they just have depth hitting, kind of like what Tennessee has. I think it's similar in that sense. And, you know, when it comes to Stamos being the open, that may be the way to go. And then they switch it up, throwing Causey out there and Snead, guys that can, you know, you obviously have Causey's breaking ball, then Snead's velocity that can kind of get to these Florida State hitters. And that'll be key, especially with, you know, considering they have a guy that probably won't go the distance, so to speak, starting. And they won't need to, because that's what they normally do on Fridays anyway.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what the pitching plan is. I mean, obviously you expect if it's a tight game and it's the middle innings, they usually go to Snead, who's got a fastball that hits 100. He's not really as overpowering as you would think with the fastball in terms of strikeouts, but he's been really effective, was one of the best relief pitchers in the league. Again, calls or combs the guy on a, you know, per inning basis, probably their most effective guy. Maybe a little more dominance there. But they had some guys, you know, saw them using J.J. Garcia late in the season. You know, if they just need straight gas, they can bring in Marcus Phillips, although it seems to get a little straight at times. You know, they got Andrew Benke's been good. They do have a lot of options. They're Dylan Loy, another guy who's pitched pretty well lately. And, of course, Kirby Cannell, that stuff might actually play a little better in Omaha, given, you know, he's not a power guy, but he's kind of a pitch contact guy. And you know, keep people from making super hard contact, although he did give up 7 home runs this year. But he was a guy that Tony Vitella trusted. Now, here's what's interesting. This kind of transcends or gets into the matchup with Florida State. Stamos is a guy who has been – it's been a little rocky lately. They'll give up – you know, he'll give up a bat or two. Those have turned into some runs lately. And they bring in – Causey, and he mops it up, and they end up being fine. But the problem is time, and with Tennessee's lineup, look, you can get away with a lot of stuff when you guys got guys that hit bombs like they had a little luxury to play with there, given the makeup of the rest of that team between the bullpen and the lineup. Now, here's the issue. I don't know that you have a lot of runs to play with in the opener with Florida State. Let me give you the numbers on Jamie Arnold. He went 102/3 innings, struck out 155 hitters, walked just 22, hit 13, batting average against .216, and maybe this is the biggest thing. He allowed 6 home runs. That's got to be one of the best home run rates in the country. And, of course, they're playing in a pitcher's park. I'm really curious as we get into Florida State. I wonder if that will affect what Tony Vitello does because, again, if Chris Stamos comes out, and I don't know what the lefty-righty composition of their lineup is top to bottom. We can look that up later. But feels to me like your margin for error slips maybe a lot given who's on the other side.
Yeah, it definitely does. Jamie Arnold's a guy who flat-out deals, as you just said. I mean, a .216 opposing average is, I think, slightly concerning. Again, this Tennessee lineup, we talk about A&M having the best lineup in college baseball. I think Tennessee's closely behind that for it. And it's going to be a big, big time matchup. And I think if you're Tony Vitello, like you said, Chris, and you start seeing Arnold kind of keeping runs off the board, you really got to lock into what you're doing pitching. And that's big, especially considering you're going with an opener more than likely Friday with Stamos and then causing Snead to follow, because this Florida State team can put up runs on the board in a hurry as well. So I think the big key to this game, this first game, at least between Florida State and Tennessee, is what goes on in the early innings, because if Tennessee gets on the board early, then you have room to play with your opener and the guys who come in. But if Arnold, you know, is shutting your lineup down, then it turns into, you kind of got to, you know, really, really show off your managing skills and, you know, learn when to put your pitchers in at the right time. So that's the biggest thing. I think it's going to be about who can get ahead early in this game, because not that these teams can't keep up with one another, but I just think the pitching matchups, it's kind of like opposite ends when it comes to, you have a guy that can go the distance in Arnold, whereas you have a normal opener in Stamos. So it's yeah, different. And the early part of this game will tell us, you know, what directions these teams go with.
Yeah. And that Florida State lineup, you mentioned Cam Smith and James Tibbs, the third, both those guys draft prospects. I think Smith number 19, in MLB.com and Tibbs 16th. I think Tennessee's got a better lineup. What you mentioned, A&M is maybe the best lineup of college baseball. I think without Montgomery now, it was close. I'll give the nod to Tennessee, but I think it's, again, this tournament's about matchups and parks. And one thing that'll be interesting to see how the park plays, because you're going to run into a lot of home run hitting teams in this part of the bracket, the four teams, which also include Virginia, North Carolina. It is Charles Schwab Field now. It used to be TD Ameritrade. Park factor the last 3 years, 1.11, which means runs scored 11% greater clip than a neutral park. Last 6 years, it's 1.03. Historically, it's 0.85. Now, those numbers are all over the place. That tells you either it's a hitter's park or an extreme pitcher's park. I think the other numbers are kind of a fluke, and maybe some of it can be attributed to winds. Nebraska is a very windy place. And a lot of times I think that right field power alley, maybe the wind had been blowing in earlier in the park's history. Maybe it's been blown out a little bit more. I don't know. Maybe it's just a fluke. You've had a lot of power hitting teams there the last few years. I don't know what to attribute that to, but I think how the park plays is going to be interesting for a lot of teams, and most notably Tennessee, because it did hit more home runs than the other teams, even though, again, you've got some teams that hit bombs in this part of the four-team bracket. In fact, all of them do. All right, we talked Florida State. Tennessee will then get, because this is the double elimination tournament, if it wins, it will get the winner of Virginia and North Carolina. If it loses, it will get the loser of that game. Let's talk about North Carolina next. I think that's probably the next best team in this bracket, or that half of the bracket. Some familiar names here. Parks Harbor, who led them in home runs, played at Georgia. Vance Honeycutt, a first-round draft prospect, an outfielder, had a big hit. And they've got a stud closer in Dalton Pence, who won them the Super Regional and is just a dominating arm. What else stands out to you about the Tar Heels here, Alfred?
They got a lot of support, too, along with those two batters you mentioned. Casey Cook's another good hitter at 339. He's been with that program forever, OPS over one. Also up there with the home run total with 18. And then obviously in the another outfielder they have, Anthony D'Onofrio, 338 average, on-base percentage up above 400, almost 450 at 447. He's not necessarily a power guy, but he's just a guy that gets on base and that can create issues as well. And we talked about it previously. North Carolina fits the bill with Florida State and Tennessee when it comes to just they could flat out hit. And they could keep up with them just as well. And that first game they have against Virginia will be interesting just because it's, two teams. I don't know if they necessarily saw each other during the season. For the sake of what I'm talking about, I'm going to imagine they did just because they both played in the ACC. And, if that lineup gets going, it'll be another tough task for Tennessee with back-to-back days of, playing teams that can hit the ball. I mean, let's say Tennessee, defeats Florida State, moves on to play North Carolina, who beats Virginia. You're going to have more than likely Drew Beam that game against North Carolina, and he'll have to be on his A game. And Beam had great starts to his starting outings, but at some point it seems like he's going to give up. He's been giving up earned runs. That's kind of cost them. So North Carolina can easily edge their way back into these games against Tennessee. That's the main concern with me is North Carolina is going to give you a similar kind of look to Tennessee as far as they have a few power guys and just guys that get on base a lot. So that's the main thing for Tony Vitello and the coaching staff to look at is, again, the managing with your pitching has to be smart here because that's been the thing is the earned runs they give up at certain points has kind of cost Tennessee big leads. And usually, like we said, though, they've ended up fine. But it's just cause for concern because this isn't Evansville you're playing now. It's, two great, if we're talking about Florida State and North Carolina, it's two great hitting ACC teams that definitely can beat you if you're not careful.
Yeah, I looked it up. Virginia and North Carolina played back April 4th through the 6th, and that was at Davenport Field in Virginia, which plays a lot like Lindsey Nelson Stadium, which means it is very much a hitter's park, shorter dimensions. Virginia won the first two games 14-11 and 7-2, and then Carolina won the third game 12-7. But again, a very different hitting environment. So I don't know what kind of stock to put in that. And I don't think looking at this Florida State and North Carolina played for whatever that's worth. So yeah, be interesting there with UNC, one of the blue blood programs of college baseball for sure. All right, let's talk about Virginia, another team that hit a lot of home runs. In fact, these teams all look kind of not super similar because Tennessee's home run total was on another level. But let me just give you some stuff. Florida State hit 123 home runs this year. North Carolina hit 113, and Virginia hit, 120-something? 115. Virginia was 46-15. Florida State was 47-15, and UNC 47-14. So all had elite seasons in their own right. Of course, the Vols won 55 games. But let's get into Virginia. The pitching is not typical Brian O'Connor pitching. I've seen a lot of pitching staffs with better arms this one's got, but boy, they used a lot of guys. You look at the stat sheet, and I don't know if I've ever seen a staff with this many guys that pitched, you know, double digit innings. That their high was Jay Woolfolk, who threw 59, and hitters. They had four guys that cracked double figures in home runs, including Harrison Didewick, who's another draft prospect, Griffo Farrell, their shortstop, not a big power guy, but a potential first rounder. I think he's ranked 21st at MLB Pipeline. And then a bunch of other guys that had really nice seasons in the power department too.
Yeah, and the one thing, Chris, that stands out to me about their pitching, and I think it's going to be interesting how they approach this part of the tournament. They have a lot of guys. Evan Blanco is their main starter. He started 17 games, but if you go down the list here, they have a lot of guys that just flat out started throughout the season. I mean, I'm counting. There's guys who, like Joe Savino, started 8 games. I mean, you have Owen Cody, who seems like he's come out of the bullpen for the most part, but he's also started 7 games. Maybe a lot of those guys could be openers, but they have a lot of people that they can either open or start in these games. And it gives teams a lot of different looks to look at when it comes to how they scout these pitchers. So I think that can play into their factor, especially, you know, with, you know, the ballpark factor. If it works out to be a pitcher's park, that heavily leans, I think, toward Virginia. So that's the one thing that stands out to me, is it's a lot of different guys who start. Once again, those could be opens as well. In fact, a good amount of them could be, just because some of them seem to be bullpen guys. But I think that almost kind of creates totally different scouting reports for these teams to look at. And that would be a headache for, let's say, Tennessee, if they were to win and Virginia were to win. You know, that would be a quick turnaround the next day with, you know, what pitcher you're going to have to look for and look at when it comes to how you plan against it, because there could be a lot of options they throw out there.
Yeah, keeping the ball in the park for these three pitching staffs, Carolina gave up, what was it, 85 home runs, I think. Florida State gave up, what, 70-something, 73, and then Virginia only allowed, I believe, 59. Is that right? Yeah, so Virginia was the team that did the best at keeping the ball in the park. So, man, I'll tell you what, this part of this four-team regional, or not regional, it's kind of like a regional. It's a four-team format. It's right back to regionals, where you go to the double elimination tournament, and then you get to the finals, and it's like a super regional where it's best 2 out of 3. So everybody's got to lose twice here. I mean, I would take Florida State to win game one, just because of Jamie Arnold and the fact that it's got some dudes who can hit too, but it feels like maybe Tennessee could still lose game one, and has got enough pitching depth to get. I guess that's where I'll ride. Like, if you said, can you take Tennessee or can you take the field in this one, on this other side, I'd probably go the field. But for lack of a better option, I'll probably take Tennessee. I don't know that Florida State's quite as strong as the other two teams. I feel like North Carolina is the best team, not named Tennessee, in this side of the bracket. But, yeah, I think it's going to be super interesting. It is not often that you see a side of the bracket in Omaha where four teams are that good. You usually see somebody slip in that's not supposed to be there, sometimes a couple of somebody's. This was not the case at all. I believe all four of these teams – well, no, Virginia may not have been a national seed, but I think the others were. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you get if you're Tennessee, is if you get there, you're going to earn it. What do you think happens here?
I can imagine the parallel to our channel, the ACC baseball channel, being like, oh, wow, NC State's, you know, or the field on the other side. That's kind of like what we're doing here. But, yeah. That's the option I think we have with choosing this side. And I think I do have to side with you on this. Jamie Arnold, he can flat out just get the strikeouts high and not give up any hits. I mean, he is a shutdown pitcher. And I think Florida State can very well. In fact, I'll take Florida State to take that first game. But the mantra I've been, you know, kind of saying in my head with this Tennessee team is I don't know if teams, or if they're going to lose twice at any point, just because of how explosive they are with the bats and how their pitching just seems to last and be good enough, you know, to keep surviving. So that's where I'm going to go with this. I think if we're doing the Florida State Tennessee game, I think Florida State gets a win just based off of Jamie Arnold's big time day. But man, I think I'm going to have to go with Tennessee making it out in the end. So the Vols, I think, you know, have their backs against the wall to start, but Tony Vitello's experience at this point in Omaha, combined with a lot of these players' experiences in the tournament and in Omaha as well, and just their ability to last with the pitching and the bats and their explosiveness, I think that gets them past here. So, yeah, Florida State, game one. But if we're picking a winner to get out of here, you know, when double elimination's all said and done, I'm going to go to the Vols.
Now, here's an interesting stat, too. Tennessee was 40-4 at home. I mean, just almost impossible to win at Lindsey Nelson. But and you look at some other teams, Florida State, 8-10 away, 7-1 neutral. You got Virginia, which was 11-5 away, 4-3 neutral. So Virginia may be a little bit of a sleeper here, even though I think maybe of the teams, other ACC teams, maybe that's the weakest of the three. And then you've got UNC, which was, by the way, 37-3 at home, was 9-6 away, 9-8 away, 1-3 neutral. So, yeah, none of these teams, other than maybe Virginia, were just great away from home, whereas Tennessee was pretty good away from home, not nearly what it was in Knoxville. But, yeah, interesting bracket. I think Tennessee's going to come out of the side, but I say that with little confidence, given the strength of the other teams here, just the nature of baseball. Like you lose that first game and it's really hard to advance. I think they've got the team to do it. I'm trying to see if Tennessee lost a game one all season. I think it did. One game one at Alabama, lost that series, lost game one against Georgia in Knoxville, won that series. It lost game one against Kentucky, won that series. Won game one against Florida, won that series. Won game one against Vandy, won that series. Won game one against South Carolina, swept that series. Lost game one against Vanderbilt in the SEC tournament, and then won four in a row to take the title. So the Vols have not lost, you know, if you even consider the SEC tournament a series, haven't lost a series all year, which is a pretty powerful statement about resiliency. So yeah, we'll talk. I might have another team. Well, we'll just get to that later. If you watch all our stuff, I'll give some insight about who I think might win the whole thing when we get to the other side. I'll save that for later. But in any case, thank you for watching us here at Southeastern 14. We'll be doing some wrap ups. We may not do it the first day or two because I'll be out of town. But we are going to be covering the College World Series and bringing that to you, and of course, following it. So hit that subscribe button, hit that like button. For Alfred Esmond, I'm Chris Lee. You're watching Southeastern 14, presented by Bet Online.